Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Corey and Curtis. Today, we are here with Mr. Ian Chaney, metal music journalist, freelance writer extraordinaire, works for a bunch of different publications, has been in the industry for a minute, and he has taken the time out of his day to answer all of our silly questions. But before we get too deep into the interview, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. We definitely appreciate you braving the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Yeah. And for those who may be unfamiliar with who you are and what you do, because we know nobody ever looks at the author of the articles that they read. Do you want to give just like a brief breakdown of who you are and what you do?
Sure. I am a freelance writer. The way that I describe what I do to bands I'm introducing myself to is that I am the idiot who writes the intro to Stereo Gum's The Black Market. I should also say that there is somebody out there on the internet that sounds amazingly like me that hosts the Plague Rages podcast. And that person, who I can neither confirm nor deny is related to myself, might also write a monthly zine called The Vaccine that goes out via email.
Fantastic.
It's awesome.
And I was going to say, Curtis, you've got the next question.
I was going to jump in there. So basically, Ian, can you kind of go over your start in journalism? Like the nutshell version of the start?
Sure. Yeah. I guess I should like clarify like up top. Like, I don't really consider myself to be a journalist per se, just because, you know, like I never went to J school. I don't have that kind of training. I definitely do some journalistic things in pursuit of trying to get some stories, but I just more so consider myself a writer, you know, just because with like metal writing in particular, we're kind of like working outside of like the journalistic model. Like, we don't have like fact checking and stuff like that. Like, we're not like edited like super hard or anything like that either. So more like the freelance writer. And I guess my question to kind of make sure that I can narrow this down, like, how far do you want me to go back?
Well, just like, you know, like how you started writing, I guess, professionally for metal, because we're going to go over a little bit more about Invisible Oranges and Stereo Gum later. So
sure.
Kind of like the start, the beginning.
Sure.
The origin story.
Yeah. So like in the capacity of writing about metal, oh man, that started about 20 years ago. So I started a GeoCities website, and man, I'm going to explode into dust when I explain.
Oh my God, Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like all the old buzzwords that we have no longer, that we have dropped. It's like for Generation Z that's listening to this, it's going to be like going to like a museum for like barbed wire or something. Awesome. So started GeoCities website, did reviews. I remember one of the first reviews I did was Raunchy's Velvet Noise, like if that brings you back. And so I also cross-posted those to a EverQuest message board. So that's how the whole criticism stuff started. Was really shaggy in the beginning, had no idea what I was doing, kind of took my lumps as I went. And then I was able to parlay that stuff into a gig at Metal Review. And I remember the genesis for me writing at Metal Review was Eric Thomas, who is like a legend in the metal reviewer space. Awesome person. Used to write like 30 or 40 reviews a month. Like, still have no idea how that person did it. But he wrote a review of Bucket Full of Teeth, which was one of the spin-offs of Orchid. It was like a kind of like a grindy screamo band. And he wrote a negative review of that. And Metal Review used to have this section it was like the Minion Lashes section. So you could write your own review if you found a review that you didn't like on the site. And so it was like, oh, cool. Like, I've already written this Bucket Full of Teeth review. I'll just dump this in there. And so that got the attention of the people over there. And then they hired me on to do some work for them. Kind of did that off and on for a long time, made a lot of connections that way, one of them being Doug Moore. And so I was kind of off in the wilderness just doing a bunch of stuff. And Doug contacted me, probably around 2013 when he became editor of Invisible Oranges, and was like, hey, you should come on and write some stuff and help me roll out this new feature called Upcoming Metal Releases, which I guess was something that they were thinking about rebooting. And so I took over Upcoming Metal Releases along with doing some premieres over at Invisible Oranges. By the time that Doug stepped down, I was next in line to take over as editor of Invisible Oranges. Spent about 6 months there, and then came to a point where I was like, cool, I'm done writing about music. I will never do this again. And that's when Michael Nelson from Stereo Gum reached out and recruited me to write stuff for the Black Market. And here we are.
So just as a quick follow-up then to that, just to clarify, so you're basically the main gigs you've had Invisible Oranges, Stereo Gum, and Metal Reviews, I think you said, right?
Yeah, that's like the main stuff. I've written for like a bunch of different places, but I wouldn't consider myself to be like, you know, an integral part of the staff there, more just like this like transient soul that will just come in, write some absolutely heinous philosophical garbage about Cynic and Bale.
Fair enough.
And you kind of touched on it just a little bit. Do you want to go over your time just a little bit more as an editor over at Invisible Oranges and what all that entailed and what it was like?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So I jumped into the editor role at Invisible Oranges and it was like 2014, I believe. Yeah, I think it was like 2014. That was trial by fire. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you. I didn't have a whole lot of experience as far as like the editing was going to be concerned, which is, I kind of think that it's kind of like par for the course for metal writers in general, where, you know, even though I came up in, kind of the more close to like the more like alt weekly days, where like I consider Metal Review to be more of like an alt weekly than I would any of like the more bloggy ventures that we have going right now. In that, you know, we're doing like Village Voice-esque reviewing and trying to, you know, cover everything that came into us a la like Chris Gow's consumer guide. You know, like one of the issues that, you know, younger writers run into, I think, is that you don't have that experience of like having a grizzled old alt weekly editor just like tear your stuff to shreds to like teach you how to write. Like I remember like the classic story is like Jack Hitt from This American Life went to a school board meeting and had no idea what he was doing there. So he filed this like long report of like everybody with like profiles of the people that were on the school board. And like it ran like 3,000 words and some editor just like cut it down to a sentence. Just so it could like run in like the paper and just like in A17 in like the top right corner. And he's like, oh, OK, so like this is writing. Right. So like when I got into Invisible Oranges, like didn't have much experience, so just had to kind of learn and by doing. And I think it kind of like it worked out interestingly because I kind of wanted to give the younger writers that were on staff the experience that I didn't have. So I was really kind of like hands on as far as the editing was concerned. But that was also my first experience with like making sure that we were able to like hit deadlines. Because I had to get 5 posts out a day that were cross-posting between Invisible Oranges and Brooklyn Vegan. And so it was a real good insight into like what real professional writing was actually going to entail.
Awesome. And Curtis, did you have a follow-up? I can't see your face, so it's...
I can't tell
when you have follow-up face right now.
Well, I did actually, but I didn't want to cut off anything you might say. So, Ian, can you also kind of go over just quickly, just kind of like with Invisible Oranges, it's a little bit more, a lot of the time on the mainstream side versus the underground side. So at least in terms of not like mainstream metal, but I mean more like the known bands, you know what I mean? can you kind of go over how you guys would kind of pick who got featured there?
Oh man, I don't know.
It's not mainstream, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like we have our indie majors, like your Metal Blade, yeah. and so on and so yeah. forth. Yeah. My reign there was kind of weird because like I just decided to write about anything, which yeah. I think that's kind of like if you're gonna give somebody like a nutshell summation of my career, it's like he just writes about anything. I think it's pretty frustrating to the powers that be, like what I'm gonna pick. Sometimes like that works out. Like I was on Sludge, like the Willow Tip band about slugs. I was onto that pretty early, so sometimes it works out. But other times it's like what is this guy doing? Especially when he's gonna write about like jazz gent or something like that. That comes from like a super like socio-political angle. I remember writing about bands like that, but. As far as picking what bands came through, it was kind of like a mix of whatever, you know, the PR relationships that I built up, whatever they would pitch to me. That was kind of an extremely important facet was, you develop these relationships with the people that are working in these large marketing campaigns, and then you get to a certain level of trust with them, and they kind of know what you're into and what's going to be the best thing for you to write about. So. I still love getting those like tailored pitches to these day to this day, right? Where somebody like really understands what I'm writing and what's going on, and I can kind of piggyback on their enthusiasm for something, and it kind of gives me more insight into like the bands that they're pitching, right? And then considering that's 2014, this is kind of like when Bandcamp is more of it's like in its embryonic phase, so didn't have the kind of the searching capabilities that we do right now, but was able to find stuff that way. But the majority of the stuff that we found and we got enthusiastic about was really through me doing the upcoming metal releases weekly column and just digging through the guts of metal archives and just seeing what was new and what was out there. Aside from that, writers would come in with certain ideas, and my whole thing is like, to this day, it's just, you know, like good, interesting copy is going to be good, interesting copy. Like, I don't really care to like gatekeep
Fair.
Certain websites or anything like that, or keep certain tones. So as yep. long as somebody has something interesting to say about something, like I'm totally game.
Fair. So it's just like whatever you want, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool. Okay. That's all I got.
Nifty. And just switching gears a little bit, how did you get involved with Stereo Gum? Because it's, you know, pretty different from Invisible Oranges.
Yeah, I was so I dropped out of Invisible Oranges end of 2014, and I was headhunted by Michael Nelson, who was a previous editor at Invisible Oranges, to come write for the Black Market, which, I mean, hilariously is like all of us have been editors at Invisible Oranges. Is like the Invisible Oranges retirement club in a way. That's so awesome. Yeah. So that's how I ended up there.
So to kind of expound on that just a little bit here, what I wanted to ask about Stereo Gum is kind of like, what is the main difference between writing for a place like Stereo Gum versus Invisible Oranges? Because I mean, Stereo Gum's owned by Spin, if I'm not mistaken.
It was so owned by Spin. So
was. Yeah. Oh, was. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Yep.
But anyways, so, go ahead.
Oh yeah, they bought it back, so now it's back private. Thankfully.
I didn't realize that. Cool. But anyways, what's the main differences between writing for the two?
I think the only real difference is that I have to make sure that I'm writing towards more of a general audience than the sole expectation that only like diehard metalheads are gonna be reading this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where, even though at the time, like Invisible Oranges was getting some more mainstream coverage from outlets like NPR and stuff like that, it was still, you know, the readership is mainly going to be metalheads. Stereo Gum, that's not the case. You know, somebody might be a big fan of Snail Mail and decide to duck into the Black Market one month and kind of, you know, see what's going on in the metal world. And so I have to kind of take that into account to make sure that I'm not using, you know, terms or going to be like too bewildering, although I will say that the music we cover is pretty uncompromising on that front anyway. Mm-hmm. Yep. So yeah, it's like we're not making real concessions as far as what we cover, but the language that we use and making sure that we kind of like explain ourselves more thoroughly. Like Aaron, who does who's one of the writers on the column, does a pretty good job of like explaining the background of everything that he's working with to make sure that, you know, that if you're like a pop punk fan, you can easily grok what like Death Doom is all about.
Cool. Now I'm just trying to think how I want to follow that back up again, because so actually, you know what? I'm going to let Corey ask the next question. I'm going to do a follow-up on that one.
Okay. And so while you're picking bands for the black market, like how do you find them? How do they come to you? Is it all press releases or do you prefer to like dig for the bands that you feature?
It's a little from column A, a little from column B. So to give some general insight into the process, when a new month rolls around, we'll open up a document and start pitching bands to each other that we all find is interesting. I actually got the last document up right here. Let me take a look and see how many we got in there. So for March 2022, I think we have like 65. Yeah, so like 65 albums that we found interesting, and it came out sometime within the past, you know, couple months. That we would consider for coverage for the black market that would kind of either be a fit for us or stuff that we're super, super stoked about writing about, or, you know, stuff that, you know, we're gonna make fun of behind the scenes because we are who we are. And so from that, I will pick through the list and kind of flag anything else that I see that is intriguing. And then the writers will come back to me and they will pitch their selections for the month. And usually it's just, you know, whatever they're most excited about. So as far as how we find music, it is a lot from PR where, you know, just existing in the metal space, like I get like 1,000 promo emails a month, and I kind of wish I was joking, but nope.
Yep.
That is fairly accurate. And I also do a lot of digging through Bandcamp. I hit up certain channels on YouTube. I find some stuff through like Twitter, through my connections there. Sometimes people like reach out to us directly. So it's kind of like this, like, all streams converging into like one, I suppose. So there's no like one set way that we find stuff, but by utilizing this multifaceted approach, I think that's kind of like how we're able to find the most interesting material.
So now here's one question. You feature pretty under the radar bands as a general rule. How did you kind of convince Stereo Gum to let you do that? I guess that's my question.
Yeah, I think like, just the fact that we built up enough trust with the readership over a long period for us to be able to do that. And I always tried to make sure that the writing was going to be like interesting and engaging.
Yeah.
If I was going to write, you know, like, I'm not going to like throw stones at like other writers, but some writers write like they're writing for like a crime blotter or something. Like they're just writing like incident reports where it's like, here is band, it is genre. First song does this, second song does this. So like, I think if we did that, we wouldn't have like a whole lot of rope as far as what we're covering. But the fact that, you know, we're doing like somewhat creative stuff, I think gives us more leeway as far as developing trust with both editorship and readership.
Mm-hmm. So, Corey, you were going to say something, I think.
No, go ahead.
Okay. So now, do you ever kind of get pressure from the site to do a little bit more of the mainstream stuff versus like some of the stuff you cover, or is it we don't give a shit?
Yeah, pretty much the latter. We're kind of like a kind of an island onto ourselves.
Okay. So now it's, how do I want to phrase this here? So like, let's say that you're getting, like, if a new band wants to pitch you to be in Stereo Gum, what would be the best way for them to do it? Like, I mean, I'm sure you get like thousands of pitches from underground bands all the time.
Yeah. I mean, just reach out to me directly and then kind of just tell me the story of your band.
So give an example. So what would be the best way to get Ian Chaney to talk to an underground metal band who's trying to get onto the black market?
I mean, just be like, hey, we are banned. Like, here's, we are banned. Yeah, we are banned. Here is the story behind our album. Like at the end of the day, like, really what I'm looking for more than anything is like interesting stories too. So like, if your band has like a super interesting story, then like, that's something that I'm going to be more interested in covering instead of just doing the whole like, hey, we went to God City and Kurt was real nice. You know, because like thousands of bands have this story at this point. Like what can you do to like differentiate yourself from like the mob? You know, that's like coming at me. That sounds like more like, I don't know, like torches and pitchforks. Like, why aren't you covering enough HM2 metal? So yeah.
Well, give us an example of like what would be like of a band that did something like that with you that really stood out, that gave you like a good interesting story.
Sure. Like a band that wouldn't normally be in our scope of coverage would be something like Ginger, because Ginger's okay. Obviously, yeah. You know, a bigger band. But Natalie, who does the PR from Napalm, came to me pitching ideas and was like, hey, like, you know, Ginger has built up this huge presence via reaction videos. And I know you've written about reaction videos in the past and like the philosophy and the psychology about them, and that might be something that they're interested in talking about. And I was like, okay, yeah, like let's go for it, you know, because like obviously we're not doing like the same old, just, you know, regurgitating the band story. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, even though I'm like not a journalist, I still want to hold myself to journalistic ideals. So I want to be able to report stories out and add something new to the story. And that was definitely something new that was coming from their direction. So, you know, hook, line, and sinker, as far as I was concerned.
Fair enough. And then how do you kind of get the ideas of what you're going to do for the whole intro section that you do before you do like the top 10?
Oh, man. So the shower.
The shower?
Yeah. Just like all of them are like shower ideas, right? So like I was trying to explain to somebody like why I go super deep into my ideas. And it's because I'm so bad at generating good ideas that if something pops in my head, it's just like I'm going to ride this to the bitter end.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
there's that's the whole process you go
pretty much. And it's just like, you know, like I might find that stuff in like anytime that I feel like I've like forced an intro into being, like I feel like it's bad, right? Fair. So sometimes it's just like, you know, I'll read through the different news depots like the PRP or like Blabbermouth to kind of like get ideas or like see something that like triggers a thought in my brain. Like I was reading in the PRP, there was some interview with Scott Hull from Pig Destroyer, and he was like, you know, the reason that people didn't like this album, this last album we did, because it was our groovy period, but we just got to get that out of our system via Napalm Death. And I was like, groovy period? I was like, do grind bands like have a definitive groovy period? And if so, I was like, is that, you know, rated poorly amongst the fan base? So like I had to go through a deep dive through like Richer Music and, you know, Metal Archives trying to find if there was a definable groovy period for grind. I don't think there is. And if it's rated more poorly than other bands, like the bands like Faster Material, maybe. Yeah. But yeah, that's like usually how the ideas come. Or there's just like stuff this month, like I'll blow what I'm writing about this month. So
we get the preview.
Yeah, so I got really interested in this idea about why have we gotten so bad at creatively naming emerging metal genres, right? Because in the 80s big boom, all of the genre names, or I will say most of the genre names, are like, when you look back at it now, it's like really catchy, creative stuff that we were able to coin back then, you know, like thrash, death metal, black metal, doom, sludge, grind, like stuff that just like sticks in your melon as soon as you hear it, and also tells you something about the music at large, right?
Now
I feel like if you look at genres and if you have no insight into the music, right, you never listen to metal in your life, and you look strictly at just the genres, it looks like nothing has happened within the past 25 years because all the genres, all we're doing is just iterating upon past genres with like a genre modifier. So instead of having something that's like forceful, like black metal, it's like atmospheric post black metal. right? Or like technical death metal. So yep. Why don't we have these like catchy names? So like, I'll put the question to like you folks, like what was the last metal genre that had a catchy name that caught on with metal at large, was adopted by metal at large?
Ooh, that's a tough question. Corey, you go first.
I have no idea, honestly. They all kind of blur together for me, and I totally agree. It's like we're naming them. So I don't know if you know the German language at all, but they just kind of like squish words together to make a new word.
Yeah.
And usually that word is just the words describing the thing that they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it becomes these gigantic, huge words. And that's how we're naming genres now, is we're just squishing existing words together and hoping for the best.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or you just put blackened in front of it.
Oh yeah. God. Yeah. Blackened. Throwing that blackened in front of it.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, none of that stuff is like descriptive in the least. Like, mm-hmm. I realized that we were creatively cooked when we came up with like post-metal. Like, post-metal is terrible. Like, what does that even describe? Like, if you're going to tell...
I don't even know.
Yeah. If you're meeting somebody at a party and you're like, hey, what bands are you into? And you're like, I'm into post-metal bands. Everyone's just going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, like Five Finger Death Punch. Like, I guess that's like post the metal, you know? So...
everybody screams.
Yeah. So like the last genre that I think we coined that as reached mass adoption within metal was djent, right?
Oh yeah.
And so even though like I have like reservations what djent has come to, you know, represent as a musical style, at least that kind of was like our last gasp as far as like creativity was concerned. But then again, like djent has been around forever at this point.
Yep.
Like, I remember there's that band, like, Tangent, you know, like, you know, the pun on tangent, and that mm-hmm. band formed in 2002. So, like, we've had, like, 20 years of djent that's been in a larger metal vernacular.
Hmm. And
so the column this month is, like, me exploring bands like Ulcerate and Convulsing
mm-hmm.
and all these Gorguts-derived bands, because I think we have a chance to give those bands their own separate genre and give them a name and try to find something interesting and exciting that we can name these bands, just so we get out of this cycle of just naming stuff like technical math sludge or something like that, you know?
Yeah. So I have a question. How long does it take you to do these? Cause you go pretty fucking in depth. Like, you did a spreadsheet in January, I think, like of all the genres and shit. Like how long do you spend on these?
Oh man. So like best case, I can get an intro out maybe in about 50 hours.
50? 50, did you say?
50, yeah.
Holy shit, dude. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So like at worst, when I wrote about the Velvet Unicorn back in 2018, The Curse of the Velvet Unicorn, that was about 3 years of reporting.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
I don't know how you do it.
I don't either.
Wow. Wow. That's dedication, dude. Wow. So what's the longest you've taken on one of these? Because, dude, that's like a whole week. Work week there.
Yeah, it gets pretty intense for sure. Yeah, I think Velvet Unicorn definitely took the longest as far as reporting was going to be concerned. There's a lot of stuff that I have like cooking on the back burner where it's just I'm waiting for, you know, like certain sources to loosen up or to make sure that I have the resources available to me. Like, I'm working with a web developer right now on two ideas that hopefully come to fruition this year. But yeah, so like anytime you talk to me, I usually have like three or four different intros that are like rattling around in my skull.
Oh okay I see. So you're kind of multitasking on them as you go. You don't just, it's not like a 50 hour
so cool. Like, I'm working on this genre one right now, and then like the long-term stuff is like I'm working on this like web development stuff, and then I'm also working on Lords of the Crimson Alliance, which was a band in the 80s that came out in Grudge Records, and they're a fake band because apparently like I've kind of backed myself into the fake band beat, right?
Oh,
like, like I do did Pile Driver, I did the band Sacrifix that was in The Gate, the 80s movie from Canada.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. So trying to figure out who's in Lords of the Crimson Alliance, and I've been working on that one for about 2 years, and that one's been tough sledding because no one wants to talk to me about it.
Well, it's going to be interesting though.
Yeah, if it ever gets done.
Yeah, if it ever gets done.
Yeah.
Cool. Corey, do you have any more questions for Ian?
Oh, of course. I do have at least one.
Cool.
So switching gears just a bit, for those, we have a lot of, you know, people who are new to the industry, people who are inexperienced in the industry, who may want to break into journalism or writing. What is your biggest piece of advice for those new folks who are looking to get their feet wet in journalism and or writing?
Okay. I think I have to kind of like break this down to a flow chart. And at the top of the flow chart, at the top of the flow chart is going to be, should I become a professional writer? And the yes side is going to give us like a whole tree that'll go down, but I should say first and foremost, no, you should not become a professional writer because you're doing a ton of work and the pay is going to be minuscule, right? So let me back that up with like actual numbers. So I won't name the place that I worked at, but I was expected to do a number of posts per day. All those posts had to have, you know, either be researched or reported. And I was working about 12 hours per day, every day of the week to make sure that that job worked, right? And I was making $15,000 a year.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Yes. And really, when it comes to like metal writing, $15,000 per year is like so low, so below the poverty line. And yet you're at like the near mountaintop when it comes to professional writers, right? So it is tough to envision a future where you can write about something like underground metal and expect to make a living wage off of it. So when we shift over to the yes column, like, yes, you need to do this because you're like me and like, you either can't do anything else because like, you're just like too dumb to do anything else. Like you just like screwed your life up so badly that like writing about metal is like the only path that's like available to you.
Yeah.
I would say that one, be able to find a flexible day job that allows you to write. Because if you have the flexible day job that you can sink back into that allow you to like subsidize everything else in your life, it makes everything so much easier. So you're not living and dying by every pitch.
What would you say would be a rough, if you're willing to say, amount that a person could expect to earn per year as a professional writer in metal if they were just going for all the paid places?
I mean, if you really hit it hard and
like rough.
Really hit it hard, maybe like $20,000 to $40,000 per year, maybe.
Cool. Just in metal, not including like,
yeah, but you're like that's like you're appearing in like Decibel every month. Like,
yeah,
you're a featured writer there and stuff like that, and like you're doing stuff for like Pitchfork and like all the different places. So, you know, like it's rare for me to meet somebody that does metal writing and that's the only thing that they do.
Yeah.
Cause they either, you know, like they either like own the website or they're working on like the editor side and like so on and so forth. Like, this is part of the reason why, you know, we continually lose our best and brightest in the industry, right? Like, Kim Kelly is a labor reporter now.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I think finding a flexible day job is probably like the most important thing. And I would say that that goes for like writing across the board, even if you're writing like, you know, even if you're doing like freelance, like journalistic narrative stuff, I think that's pretty key right now, especially in, with the way that the economy is. The being metal specific, I think one of the other things that would behoove a young writer is that you don't have to go to journalism school. But I think it's worth getting some journalism training. And how you decide to do that journalism training, it's going to be completely up to you. Either like you take a few straight classes or you find like internships, but internships are like, that's like its own inequitous, you know, stuff that we're holding on strong to anyway, but make sure that you find some way to get some journalism training, because it's 2022. You know, we are living in music in a post R. Kelly world. And the reason that somebody like R. Kelly was able to persist so long was because no one wanted to do the journalism to crack that case, right? We had one guy that was going through reporting on it, and that was it. Everyone else is kind of like spit the bit, because it's like, how do I report on what this person is doing? You know, like the whole reason that Inquisition got caught up in the child pedophile net is that somebody ran a background check on him.
Yep.
And that's like journalism 101. Yep. Like if you're writing a profile on somebody, you just run a background check to kind of see what's out there.
Yep.
And so I think especially now that everything is so heated and so politicized, I think it would behoove people to make sure that they have some journalistic training.
Cool. Awesome. Corey, do you have any follow-up questions before we end off?
That was my big question. Curtis, do you have a follow-up?
I don't think I do, but Ian, do you have anything else that you wanted to say before we end off?
I don't think so. I mean, cool. Get at me, you know, like, as I said previously, you know, if you're a young writer in the biz, like, again, like, I don't think you're receiving the best editing if you're just working on the journal, the metal side, just because that was usually hands-off about that stuff. Like, at best, like, you'd get, like, a line edit from somebody. If you're a young writer and you need assistance on like how should I structure this piece or anything, like reach out to me. I'm willing to offer that help.
Cool. That's very, very, very awesome. Okay. And with that, party on, Corey.
Party on, guys.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.